Afternoon, members of the court, counsel. My name is Scott Larson. I represent the appellant, Daniel Mikes, in this matter. From Mr. Mikes's perspective, this is a relatively simple appeal. Basically, it is a challenging of Judge Holmes's findings of fact at the trial court level, and then issuing an order on motion for summary judgment. The issue that Judge Holmes was presented with was whether or not Mr. Mikes was a possessor of property or someone who occupied with the intent to control the property that he was actually on at the time that he was injured, when he was herding cattle at the request and invitation of his friend, sometimes business partner, Mr. Lester Friend. So when I say friend, it's both his friend and that's Mr. Friend's name. The answer, of course, from Mr. Mikes' standpoint is simple, and it's he absolutely was a possessor. He was in control and occupied the premises, and Judge Holmes didn't pay any attention to or analyze the facts that were put before him on a motion for summary judgment, and therefore violated the standard that every inference is to be granted to the responding party with respect to whether or not there is a material issue of fact. The facts that were presented would, I would submit to you, allow a six-person conflagration of people to reasonably come back with a verdict in favor of the plaintiff. The trial court concluded that as a matter of law, there were no material issues of fact as to whether Mr. Mikes was in fact in possession of the property. In other words, was he occupying or controlling it? And the court did that, quite honestly, because the cases cited by the defendant, by and large, rely on situations not involving quarry, clause, and prejudice. They rely upon the word possessor in the title of the property genre. And this case is somewhat interesting from the standpoint that the doctrine we're talking about is hundreds of years old, and the case law is almost as old. And about once every 50 or 60 years, we find a case where it actually becomes important again, at least to the litigants in this case. The trial court in its analysis didn't analyze, comment, or give any weight to the evidence before it that Mr. Mikes could be considered a possessor. What were the facts?
Mr. Larson, can we get back to the definition of possessor, because I think that's where at least I'm having trouble with your argument. If possessor means somebody in momentary possession, is that enough? In other words, if I'm allowed to go hunting on a piece of property and I enter onto the piece of property with the intent to hunt, and someone's animal who's trespassing from the neighboring plot comes in and gores me, am I a possessor of property for purposes of the trespass argument?
Absolutely not, sir. You're a social guest. You are the invitee that, and I forgot the name of the case, I apologize, one of the cases that the defendant cited. I believe you're a social guest.
So momentary, being momentarily on the property, is that what you're basing it on?
No, sir.
Because I don't understand the premises liability statute. Maybe you made a different argument here. I don't understand that to be effective on this doctrine.
It is not, and I said so in my reply here.
Okay.
However, I use the word social guest, not in terms of the premises liability argument or the premises liability statute in Colorado, but in terms of a social guest is a person who's there by invitation for something other than the right to possession or control. It's not a difficult concept, but I can see how you would want to mix apples and oranges in that situation if I were the defendant. Here, we have, and I would classify it as more than momentary. I don't like the word momentary, but that's your honor's word, and that's fine. It's not momentary. He's there for a particular particular request and purpose. He is, in fact, the agent of, servant of, or employee of Mr. Friend. He stands in Mr. Friend's shoes. He's in possession of the property, or he's occupying it. Excuse me. The definition comes actually from the case in two places. It comes from Pearson versus Black Cannon, which is a Colorado case, which adopted the 1965 version of the restatement 328E, where Pearson says that possession is basically occupying and with the intent to control. And it comes from Williams versus Goodwin, which is a California appellate court, which says the same thing. And so possession has been qualified in those instances to mean someone who was there for a purpose that required them to actually occupy the property and in so doing control it. So the circumstances under which the plaintiff is on the property, and this is also in the Williams case, to some extent dictates whether or not they have control. So the hunter, for example, is not,
Sorry, counsel, I didn't mean to speak over you. Isn't he in fact on the property to control the animals, not the property?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Isn't he on the property to control the animals and not the property itself?
No, he's on the property to control the condition of the property and to remove the animals. He's not controlling the animals. Anyone who's driven cattle knows you can't control them. They're pretty wild.
Well, when you talk about occupying possession, I didn't read any of Mr. Friend's testimony to allow him to, say, erect a fence or a building. So what exactly, what rights did he have when you talk about possession of the land?
I believe that in conjunction with 328E, the 2012 amendment, possessory interests can be multiple. And they cite, and also they use the possession, the occupation and control to equate it to possession. And they even, they say, well, an independent contractor, for example, can be in possession, of the property, and can occupy and control it to qualify for the protection of quarry clause and fraud.
But in those particular cases, aren't they granted some specific rights to exercise dominion over the property?
I think Mr. Mice was, in fact, granted specific rights to do that, and his dominion was to clear the calf.
Because in the Williams case, he was allowed to cultivate a garden, he had lived there for a long period of time, he was allowed to put an erector or bring his trailer onto the property. So we don't have any of those kind of facts and evidence in this case.
But that goes back to the old, that goes back to the argument that possessor can only mean you have to have some sort of title or implied title to be on the property, that you're a resident there. And Colorado law does not require residency. That's Robinson versus Kirk. That's what that case is. Certainly the 7-year-old boy had no title to that property. And in fact, he was doing exactly the same thing for his grandfather. Excuse me, I'll put that finger away, I apologize. He was doing exactly the same thing for his grandfather that Mr. Mikes was doing for Mr. Friend. And if you recall that case, Robinson, his grandfather told his grandson, get that horse out of the front yard. So in that moment, his grandson stood in his shoes. He was the possessor of the property. He was the occupier with the intent to control it, and his act of control was to remove the livestock. He was in dominion over the property, but he was removing the livestock. I've answered your question, great. If not, that's the best I can do. So.
Well, Mr. Larson, let me ask you, on the other end of the spectrum, you're saying you don't need title, you don't need ownership, but where do you draw the line between having a right of access to property versus possession of property? Because the facts that I'm hearing here is that Mr. Mikes had access to the property via keys combination to a padlock, but where do you draw the line between access and possession?
Mr. Mikes is, well, I believe that the indication that he has access to the property also shows that he had a right to possess it for purposes of occupation and control for whatever reason he was there. There's nothing in the record that indicates that he did anything on this property other than move cattle, place other stock in there, those types of things, which would be the same type of things that Mr. Friend was entitled to do. And Mr. Friend's testimony was that they traded these types of services or help on a regular basis. I don't think the right of access is the key there. I think it's the right of access in conjunction with the reason that he would have been there, which are the things that Mr. Friend talked about. This is what we do. We've done hating things here, this kind of thing. He's not there to be a hunter. He's not there to be a good neighbor. I think Mr. Mayor's example is, he's on his TV down the stairs or something like that. But there's no livestock involved in those instances. This is a very, very narrow situation. It applies only to strict liability in contradiction to the fence out state. The fence out law that governs property damage. So, again, the defense has argued that if you happen to find in favor of Mr. Mike, that you would open the floodgates of litigation. And quite honestly, I've handled two cases involving trespassing livestock in my 34-year career, and one of them was property damages where it was handled by the fence out statute. And at the time, Mr. Mikes was actually on the premises. What is he doing? I mean, he is absolutely controlling the premises. That's what he's doing. And again, going back to your question, Your Honor, he is moving property. He is moving livestock off of this real property. It doesn't matter, you know, that he's there on a four-wheeler or whatever. That's what he's doing. And so that's what he's doing. And according to Williams versus Goodwin, that's what he has to do. He has to be there for the purpose of occupation and control. I alluded to this earlier because in Williams versus Goodwin, the plaintiff's relationship or the reason he's there oftentimes dictates whether or not the person is exercising possession of the property. And what I was going to get to is what I answered Judge Case Cole's question about the hunter. That's a recreational activity. You're not there to control the property. You're there to maybe shoot some game, but that's not control of the property. That's simply an invitation for you to be able to do something that doesn't require control at all of the property. Or that you have to occupy it for purposes of shooting the animal or whatever you're doing, the bird. But you don't have to control the property for that. Again, I've already talked about 320E a couple of times, but 320E, especially the 2012 version, recognizes the current day real life uses of agricultural property by not requiring quote legal title of the property to avail oneself of the protection of the doctrine of quarry, clause, and prejudice. Comment D then also indicates and recognizes that multiple people can control the property at the same time. The defense brings that up. The appellee brings that up in their brief, indicating that, that's going to be a bad thing. I mean, that defense can be confusing or shouldn't be recognized. But really, as I pointed out in my reply brief, the defendant has that in a case like this if he wants to assert that right. And that's fine. There's no problem with that. He may have superior rights, and therefore it remains a defense for him. But otherwise, that's really the only applicability to it. We believe that Mr. Mikes was clearly occupying the premises with the intent to control it, and we would ask that you reverse the trial court because of its failure to recognize the facts that were before it that would allow a jury to decide, and in conjunction with the Williams case, these are generally considered to be situations where, unless there is, I'll read the wording as opposed to trying to do it. Unless it can be said that as a matter of law, the evidence upon this issue is palpably insufficient to support a verdict for the plaintiff. And I would submit that the evidence is way beyond palpably insufficient, that the evidence, in fact, can support a verdict for the plaintiff. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Your Honors and Counsel, my name is Ellis Mayer. I represent Mr. Burnett and Mr. Craven in this case. Just to be clear, Mr. Bishop was dismissed out of the case earlier on. He's not a party at this point. I agree with counsel that this is a simple case for the court to decide in terms of the impact of your decision. You get to decide whether you expand trespass law to include people that are just, as one judge has already said, temporarily on the property, but basically expand it to people who are not truly occupying premises for any particular reason. The facts are not in dispute. The court decided the same facts that you're hearing today, that he was the plaintiff was acting as a friend of Mr. Frank, as he's done in the past, that he was on his ATV while herding cattle, that he injured himself while trying to remove the cattle, and that he had keys that would open up padlocks. No one's disputing those facts, the same facts, and the court does have the elbow power over those facts. But the question becomes, was that enough for the court to decide based on existing case law? The answer is yes, that he was not an occupier and did not have a right of trespass. And the second question that comes from this court, you want to expand trespass law to include someone in Mr. Knight's situation. I wrestled for a long time with the Quarry Clausen Frigate concept of trespass. It took me a long time to figure out that that just means breaking the clothes. It has nothing to do with livestock. It has nothing to do with anything. It's simply a distinction between trespass on title and trespass on the case. That's all it is. It's not a special type of trespass that applies to livestock. And it's the same trespass that we all have known, love, and see only occasionally, apparently, in the case law, because I've had difficulty finding in case law that explains this case in any great way. The case decided by the plaintiff for the Quarry Clausen Frigate stuff has nothing to do with livestock except Robinson versus Kerr. The other cases, Sullivan and Huguenin, both deal with disputing rights over property. Rudolph versus Thompson, I think I may have cited that one, was an argument with the United States over who owned the land. There simply is no specific trespass case dealing with livestock, and not that it matters to this case at all, but the fence out statute that Colorado has only deals with property damage. It has nothing to do with a personal injury. That's also what Robinson versus Kerr stands for. So let's talk about Robinson versus Kerr, because I think it's pretty important. It's the only case the plaintiff finds that he says supports the idea that you don't have to be an owner or an occupier with the intent to control that suddenly makes you somebody who can make a claim for trespass. Robinson versus Kerr was brought by the grandmother of this 7-year-old kid. Hard pressed to equate a 7-year-old kid with Mr. Mikes on an ATV herding cattle, but I understand why the plaintiff has made that argument. So in that case, you see that the maternal grandmother is the next friend and guardian of the child. There's nothing in the record to say why that's the case. There's nothing in the record that says that he wasn't living there with his grandmother and or that the grandmother was the guardian. In fact, there was no argument made in Robinson versus Kerr that I'm making in this case. Now, I can't imagine that the attorneys in Robinson versus Kerr didn't think of the idea if that was really their defense of the case. It happens to be the defense in this case. It wasn't the defense in Robinson versus Kerr, and Robinson versus Kerr does not stand for the proposition as the plaintiff claims. Now, I use these weird examples in my brief about voluntarily helping neighbors because I don't herd cattle. I've never herded cattle. I have no idea how to herd cattle, and I wouldn't start now. But the point is that I have helped my neighbor move a television set into the basement, and I have shoveled my neighbor's walks for a variety of reasons. And I was wondering out loud to myself, and that's why I stuck it in the brief, does that give me the right to trespass? Should a trespass occur that injures me? No, it may give me a right to a negligence claim. A negligence claim which the plaintiff had in this case and chose for whatever reason to dismiss. But it doesn't give me a right to trespass simply because I'm doing something gratuitous for my neighbor, albeit temporary. I come up with a different example that seems to equate a little better. What if you had a cleaning service that has keys to your house and can come into your house? According to the plaintiff, that cleaning service now would have a right of trespass claim against a trespasser, should that arise. Case law in Colorado does not say that. And frankly, I can't find case law anywhere that says that. I was digging, trying to find some definition in Colorado of the word occupy or occupier, and I really couldn't find it. The closest I got, I cited in the brief, McClellan versus Hurd talks about the fact that in a trespass case, which again was not a livestock case, but simply trespass, there was a manager for the property owner who was selling tickets on the property, and they considered that person, sounds like a direct employee of me, not somebody who had any possessory right in the property. The restatement second of torts, 328E, cited by the plaintiff, had lots of cases, and only a few of them dealt with definitions of occupier. They had a person who was drilling a well on property with the permission of the owner. That case is Stafford versus Rogers, 493 Southwest 2nd, 297, Texas case, to the extent you want to rely upon Texas. They said that person, that driller, did not have a possessory or occupying interest in the property in order to bring a trespass claim. In a case out of Indiana called Duffy versus Ben D, two words, Inc., 651 Northeast 2nd, 320, there was a contractor building a bridge on the property, did not have a right to bring a trespass claim. Another Indiana case, Woods versus Qualcraft Industries, 648 Northeast 2nd, 1198, a concrete subcontractor on the property did not have the right to bring a trespass claim. And finally, there was a flag football club in Philadelphia that once a week would go out in the city park and paint their lines in there, play a game. That was once a week. They were also not considered landowners or occupiers for purposes of personal injury claim. The bottom line is that the plaintiff admits to not having constructive possession, is not the owner of the property, and the only circumstances that the plaintiff claims gives rise to some ability to bring a trespass claim is the fact that he was helping a neighbor herd cattle and had keys. The end. The judge had that information. The judge decided correctly based upon the law that that was not enough to create control over the property. And frankly, if a set of keys makes control over that property, Mr. Larson and I will benefit very much from that kind of decision. But I'm not sure that trial courts below or this court of appeals would like the ultimate effect. We would ask that the court affirm the decision below. And I'm done, unless the court has any questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Too many years in Catholic school. First of all, Mr. Mites was not helping Mr. Friend herd cattle. Mr. Mites was out there removing trespassing cattle. I disagree with Mr. Mayor that quarry quasi fregit, which means breaking the clothes, is not specifically designed for a livestock situation. It's exactly what it's designed for. So I don't agree with that assessment, and he and I will probably argue about that to our graves. The servant, or not the servant, but the cleaning service example he used is just as ridiculous as the other examples he used. It does not involve livestock trespassing inside someone's home and injuring them. The trespass otherwise would involve someone breaking and entering. And there's no question that you'd have a right of action, some kind of action, but I don't think it's applicable. That's not an analogy. We're talking apples and oranges. Robinson versus Kerr, quickly. The problem with Robinson versus Kerr, Mr. Mayor's problem with Robinson versus Kerr, is that the record that council wants is not the record that exists. And I did object to Mr. Mayor's failure to cite citations in the record in my reply brief, and I will take issue with the fact that he takes liberty with Robinson versus Kerr in supposing that there's some ulterior issue or motive or fact that this was brought by the grandmother. The decision there didn't hinge on the grandmother being the next friend, or not the guardian or anything else. The decision there hinged on the horse that got onto the grandfather's property and struck the child. And there is no case law or any that I can find across the country that means that a blood relative is required. I'm out of time. Thank you all.
Thank you both for your arguments this afternoon. This case will stand submitted. We will get you a written opinion in due course.